It's widely accepted that the UK economy is already 5% smaller than it would otherwise be. If you apply the multiple of tax revenue to the GDP, you pretty quickly get up to 80 billion of lost tax revenue every year, that is, every year. Then there's interest rates. The interest rate on the national debt has gone from 20 odd billion to 107 billion this year. And 20 billion was just 4 years ago. So that's a huge amount. And we forget, well, a lot of people don't realize that our interest rates are such that we are now paying 50% more than Greece.
Hello, I'm Brendan Donnelly. I'm the Director of the Federal Trusts, and today I'll be talking with Graham Bishop, a member of the Federal Trust Council, and a well-known financial commentator and expert. We'll be talking particularly about the question of a reset, a possible reset in relations between the United Kingdom and the European Union. Graham, welcome. It's been a momentous year in the sense that we had a long-awaited election and a change of government, a government that claimed to want to reset its relations with the European Union. How's that been going in the financial sector?
Well, it hasn't, is the short answer. The Chancellor went to ECOFIN, having given the Mansion House
ECOFIN
meeting.
being.
ECOFIN, the European Council of Finance Ministers, Economic and Finance Ministers. She unusually was invited to go and address them and just talked about the fact that she would like, the UK would like, the city to continue to be the financial centre of the EU. And the EU has some nervousness about that.
Where does that come from, that uncertainty, that hesitation?
Well, President Donoghue of the Eurogroup and ECOFIN, he said it's very important to refocus on these relationships because we have a bedrock of shared values. Now, the problem is their value is the financial stability of the euro area. Our bedrock of values is the city's business and therefore the tax revenues that come from it. So it's not clear to me that we share that view about absolutely underpinning the financial stability of the euro area.
Has trust in the stability and good faith, if you like, of the City of London, the reliability at least of the City of London, been shaken by the Liz Truss budget last year, a couple of years ago, which seems to have been a seismic event for many people?
Yes. I think it's the trust in the city. People did in fact pay up, so they kept their word. The real problem is if something like that happened in the euro area, would the UK be willing to find the liquidity? It's interesting just to consider the scale of what that problem was. The Bank of England was in the process of running down its holdings of gilts. In the space of 3 days, it reversed that policy and announced it stood ready to buy, I think it was 65 billion of gilts, more or less immediately. In fact, the pension funds were able to lay their hands on liquidity elsewhere of the 70 billion they needed, 70 billion. So the Bank of England only had to buy 19, 20 billion. But nonetheless, out of the blue came this huge storm, which required liquidity to be supplied by the central bank, which issues sterling, Bank of England, to such a huge tune. The question is, if that happened elsewhere in the euro area, would the Bank of England be able to supply the euros to deal with the problem in euro clearing based in London?
Did the budget, which we had earlier this year, reflect the problems of Brexit as far as they affected the City of London, perhaps
Well,
particularly in lost tax revenue?
no, I don't think it did. It's never been mentioned, and yet it's widely accepted that the UK economy is already 5% smaller than it would otherwise be. If you apply the multiple of tax revenue to the GDP, you pretty quickly get up to 80 billion of lost tax revenue every year, that is, every year. Then there's interest rates, the interest rate on the national debt has gone from 20 odd billion to 107 billion this year. And 20 billion was just 4 years ago. So that's a huge amount. And we forget, well, a lot of people don't realize that our interest rates are such that we are now paying 50% more than Greece. Greece, the byword for gone bankruptcy, we're paying 50% more. That's in the long run, that's about 20 billion. And then if we bolt on the cities, the loss of tax revenue from the city, which is presently running at about 110 billion a year, pretty soon you're up to over 100 billion of tax revenue being preempted to pay for the costs of Brexit. Nobody seems to comment on that. It's amazing.
Over the past few years, largely as a result of the financial crisis of 15 years ago, there's been a lot of new regulation that's been introduced in the financial sector at an international, European, and British level. Have British standards, British regulation, kept step with that of the EU, or have they diverged, or what's the relationship at the moment?
Well, the starting point was 2007-8, the great financial crisis, where Gordon Brown, Prime Minister of the day, Labour, convened the G20 and got them to agree a set of proposals to basically regulate every aspect of the financial system and supervise it in accordance with those. And that's where the tsunami started. We're now up to, in terms of capital requirements for banks, because it was a banking problem, we're now on the sixth iteration of the Capital Requirements Directive and the third of the Capital Requirements Regulation. And these run to hundreds of pages together with their secondary legislation, thousands of pages. We adopted all that, of course, while we were a member of the EU, and pretty well follow it at the moment. This is, of course, a very vexed question as to whether we do seriously start diverging now. But if we do, then there's a question of the acceptability of our bank regulations, financial regulations to the EU.
Well, how likely is it that we will wish to diverge, or be able to diverge?
Well,
Significantly, I mean.
under the previous government, only 6 months ago, we intended to scrap all of it. That was, but that's now gone, and it's not yet clear what the current government is going to do. There's talk of a discrete dynamic realignment of many regulations, but there's still quite a bit of, well, quite a bit of ambiguity about the financial sector. And there's no particular need to do much at the moment because the EU has finished its burst of regulations and they will come up for review in due course. And then will come, if there's a significant change, then will come the question of do we follow that or not?
And what will be the highlights, the particular areas of controversy about whether we follow in future European regulation or not?
Well, I think this is where I come back to my old question of derivatives clearing. Euro-denominated derivatives are basically cleared in London, and so do we follow the EU rules? Are we then deemed equivalent? That's the key thing, which is a unilateral Commission decision as to whether or not UK regulations produce an equivalent outcome to those of the EU. And at the moment, they have rolled over that, and there's the third iteration of the European Market Infrastructure Regulation, EMIR. Third iteration is just coming into force. And that includes the requirement for EU major investors to have an active account, the active account requirement at EU-based CCP, central clearing part, central counterparties. We don't have that. That comes into force on the 5th of January. And in the next few years, you can expect, or I would expect, being a bit of a cynic, that once it's demonstrated that EU funds have got that system operating and they've got the mechanics to do it, then it will go from being a reasonable amount of your business must be cleared in the EU up to much more, some larger percentage.
But this process has been heralded several times in the past, and it's been postponed. There are those who draw the conclusion from that that the EU does indeed need the City of London more than the City of London needs the EU. Why will it be different this time? And as I understand it, it won't be different in the short term. It will be a medium to long term process you're talking about.
Exactly. Yes. Right now, today, the EU needs the city, but there is a commitment. New Commissioner Albuquerque of for financial services was questioned heavily in her parliamentary hearings about when she would bring euro clearing back into the euro area, when and how, and so there is this active account requirement in force. It's a question of pursuing it. And then looking at how well it works. And then the June 2025 deadline for the lapsing of the equivalence decision, the existing one that you referred to on clearing, that will have to be rolled over because there isn't time now to make sure that all these systems, very complicated systems, work. And I would imagine it would be rolled over for another 18 months, 2 years. So that would take you up to end of 27, 28. And in that time horizon, the Commission and the EU would be looking to persuade, encourage EU institutions to use EU-based CCPs for their derivatives operations. That is the intention. And it's taken longer than people hoped. But the key was to legislate with EMIR 3 at third iteration. And that comes into force, as I said, on well, 2 weeks' time.
Does the EU fear, is it part of the motivation of the EU in its approach to the City of London? Does it fear cherry picking on in the financial sector from the United Kingdom?
Well, this is an exact example of cherry picking, which they said during the negotiations ad nauseam on the treaty, and continue to say it quite vigorously, there will be no cherry picking. And in their view, allowing the city to have a derogation from the rules, which are they view as being vital to their financial stability, let's not beat about the bush. And in that, they are absolutely right, in my view. They should not allow that cherry to be picked.
Again, some people say that the impact on the city in terms of employment and turnover of Brexit has been less than the most pessimistic judgments at the time predicted. Do you think that's right, or is it a question of timing, or how do you see that as a global judgment 8 years after?
Well, the city didn't start moving until well after the, or making preparations, should I say, till well after the referendum. And then when it became clear that Article 50 notice had been given and something was going to happen, and then looking at the treaty and trade cooperation, did that include special dispensations for the city? No, not mentioned. City thrown under the bus. So the firms began to make their preparations. And I think the number of jobs which have actually been physically moved out of the city is quite limited. But when you look at the growth of the financial sector in Europe, the growth is coming in the euro area, in Frankfurt, Amsterdam, Paris, of course, Dublin, Luxembourg. It's been spread far and wide, which is not surprising in the world of the internet, but it's happened. And it's the decision makers who are moving. And after a while, the trade clearing and all the sort of back office stuff will follow. But it's not something which happens overnight. It's bit by bit. New decisions are made about new businesses and where shall they be located. And we need a new computer system to run whatever it may be. Where are we going to put it? We're going to put it in the EU.
What's your judgment, your overall judgment of the likelihood of anything that could seriously be described as a reset in relations with the European Union as far as specifically the financial sector is concerned. Do you take seriously the claim of the Chancellor that this is an area where the European Union will benefit particularly from a closer relationship, and that whatever the rights and wrongs of cherry picking in other circumstances, financial services are something of an exception?
Well, I hear the statement accurately portraying the UK view of these matters, but I don't accept it. I don't believe that they will allow a financial stability risk, an obvious manifest risk. I mean, if things go wrong, and of course they shouldn't, and all these regulations have been created to prevent them going wrong, but several times in recent years there have been crises which have popped up which nobody thought of. They've popped up, and we've just had the LDI one is it was all about derivatives, margin calls on derivatives. It's an exact parallel of what they're afraid of. The derivatives in euro alone, forget about dollars, are now they've risen 50% since 2020. They're now up to 180 trillion, not billion. So it's 10 times the EU's GDP. And this is enormous. If anything goes wrong, you will see margin calls which rack up to, I used the example of scaling up the LDI problem, of 500 billion. These are enormous sums, and that is an obvious financial risk to the EU, which they're bound to guard against. So
Yeah.
they're not going to just stand back and say, it's okay, we trust you. As we come up to the next iteration of all these things, they're saying it'll be 2027, 28, the 2029 general election will be on the horizon. I look at the opinion polls, I think they can read the opinion polls too, and they see Nigel Farage having a significant shot of being prime minister. So if there were a crisis in 2028, which required the ECB to lend the Bank of England several hundred billion euros at very short notice, and there was a real risk of Nigel Farage becoming prime minister, who on earth would say we're sure that Nigel would pay it back? Boris Johnson didn't,
Yeah.
or promised. He said he would stand by this treaty, and when it came to it, the treaty he'd negotiated, he was prepared to break within a very short time.
Yeah. Well, a sobering thought on which to end. Thank you very much for this review. I'm sure we'll have many similar reviews over the coming years. Thank you very much.
Sadly, we will.
Thank you.